How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint? Dents? Dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. We have a really special, perhaps chaotic episode coming up for you guys. We've got several guests today. This initially started with me and the executive director of the Innocence Project of Texas, Mike Ware, having some conversations about what's going on in the Sandy Milgar case. I know that a ton of you have just been waiting and waiting and waiting to get more updates on her case. There's been some updates on Jesse's case. And through our conversation, we decided to just come on with a whole pack of attorneys that are all down in San Antonio right now celebrating Mike's induction, I think. Is that the right word, Mike?
I believe that's the right word.
Yeah, into the Defense Attorney Hall of Fame. Did I also get that right?
Well, Texas Criminal Defense Attorney Hall of Fame, yes.
There it is. So we have a Hall of Famer in our presence. Mike has brought along with him, you guys all know and love her, Allison Clayton, who worked on Jesse's case and Ed Eight's case, and is now doing some work on Allison's case, I think. We also have Caitlin Gilbert joining us, and she's one of the attorneys that are working on Sandy's case. And Mike said Caitlin will have a lot of the information. She's definitely our go-to on Sandy's case. And then we have Dennis Obregon. Did I get that right?
Beautiful.
Excellent. And Dennis is an attorney that is working on a case that we haven't talked about on the show, but Mike was just telling me about it. I just wanted to highlight a little bit. As I mentioned in the follow-up this week, you know, there's lots of innocence organizations out there throughout the country. Some of them are, you know, they're all, I think, doing their best. Some of them are doing some good work. But then there's others that, in my opinion, really stand above, rise above the fray. And the Innocence Project of Texas is one of those organizations that are constantly doing great work, and we're seeing exoneration after exoneration and people being freed one after another. And as my audience knows, that's no easy task to accomplish. So I wanted to highlight that case as well, Joe David Padron's case, and that is why Dennis is here. So first and foremost, Mike, congratulations on your Hall of Fame induction.
Well, thank you, Bob. I really appreciate it. It really is an honor, and I'm very proud of it.
And since I know that you're going to be super humble about it, Allison, can you tell us a little bit about what just happened to Mike?
My gosh, I would be honored. So in Texas, we have an organization. It's called the Texas Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. It is about 3,000 members or so, 2,000, 3,000 members at this point. The who's who of Texas criminal defense are a part of this organization. Every year, they welcome the most distinguished attorneys into the Hall of Fame. It is the most prestigious honor a criminal defense attorney in Texas can receive. And this year, Mike was one of the ones who was inducted.
We decided inducted, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
That's whenever, what they say in the NFL.
Yeah.
Whenever I was doing my notes for everything, I kept on, my phone kept autocorrecting it to indicted. Yeah. He's indicted into the Hall of Fame. But anyway, yeah. So it's like the biggest deal that an attorney the biggest award that an attorney here can receive. And Mike just received it. So it's a great day. It's just a wonderful thing.
That's fantastic. And I'm told you were the one that got to present the award to him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I did. It was just the most incredible honor that I could have. Just it was incredible. It was wonderful. So I tried to do him proud. I tried to make sure that it was going to be a hard act to follow.
It definitely was.
Yeah.
Made a lot of people cry. I'm just saying.
And then they're like, now we got to hear from this guy.
But well deserved. It was just, you know, there's no one in Texas who can compare to Mike as far as I'm concerned. He's the best that there is.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I consider myself very lucky. I was thinking about today when I was driving back to the office to do this, that just this has been such a wild ride for me, just from a guy that nobody started a podcast in his basement, that I've, you know, I'm privileged to call Mike and Allison my friends at this point over the time. The fact that I can, you know, call you guys up is just, you know, one of the Hall of Famers from the state of Texas. That's great.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And so without any further ado, I think the way we're going to go through this is our other attorneys, Caitlin and Danis, we'll kind of introduce you a little bit more when we get into the cases. We'll just kind of go through. What I'd like to do is talk about, you know, because I know there's a lot of, Mike and you and I had talked a little bit about it yesterday. There's a lot of developments in the Sandy Milgar case. So I want to talk about that. And then anything we can share about the Jesse Eldridge case. And then I'd like to talk a little bit about the Joe David Padrone case, just because that's been another incredible win that IPTX has had. So let's go ahead and start with Sandy Milgar, just to kind of tee it up. So my listeners left off with, you know, we covered her case. Gosh, I think we started her case back in 2018, somewhere around there. And we covered it. We made a lot of traction in the case. We got the attention of Kathleen Zellner, who had kind of taken the case over. And once she took the reins, we kind of stepped back from the case and just kind of let her do things. We got word. Mike reached out to me a couple of years ago or a year or so, whenever it was. Kathleen had turned the case over to IPTX to start working on. And my audience really hasn't heard much about what's been happening since then. And I get asked that, I mean, literally every single week, there's what's going on with Sandy, what's going on with Sandy. So what's been happening with Sandy since IPTX took the case back over?
You know, I'm going to let Caitlin start out talking about that. We've done a lot of reanalysis and further analysis of the DNA samples that were taken originally as part of the crime scene. And we just filed a motion this week to do some additional DNA testing that could prove very promising. But anyway, I'm going to let Caitlin tell you about it.
Excellent.
Hi, Bob. As Mike mentioned, we were focusing a lot with the DNA. We also we're not going to get into any specifics about it at this stage, but we also have some boots on the ground trying to do some non-DNA investigation for alternate perpetrators and things of that nature. But we wanted to make sure we went through the DNA with a really fine tooth comb. It is really astounding, having looked at this case with Mike and Chase as well, a former Department of Public Safety crime lab DNA analyst turned lawyer who looked at the DNA. And it's astounding the collection of evidence done by the sheriff's office, and that there weren't more opportunities in a home invasion, you know, of especially the nature of this crime, to test DNA. But we've really, I think, after this motion, we'll have explored everything we can from that avenue. So we're hoping to get some good results. Mike, I don't know if you were wanting to go into the specifics of what we're requesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think, you know, specifically, in there's been a lot going on, but we have worked in the past with this company in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, called Cybergenetics, who have they do not do DNA testing, but they do DNA analysis and reanalysis from when the tests already exist. In other words, they have a software that can analyze profiles that are at a much lower level than perhaps some of the other DNA tools do, such as StarMix. And so what we have done is we've taken all the raw data that was generated from the original crime scene DNA swabs. And they swabbed a lot of things in the house. They could have swabbed more, but so much of it just turned out no results, too low level.
Right.
We can't say whose DNA this is. And so we have been able to get that raw data to Cybergenetics for their analysis for them to put it through their software, which is called TrueAllel. They're a very reputable company. I think the Georgia Bureau of Investigation uses them. There's police agencies that use them. And they have been able to reach some results or get some results on what heretofore have been inconclusive or too low level. And I'll say probably the most important in my mind, there's a couple, is, you know, if you followed the trial, read the original trial transcript, the murder weapon in this case, recovered from the bathtub, a knife, mm-hmm. a kitchen knife, had Jamie Melgar's DNA on there. And the handle, from where you would assume the person wielding the murder weapon, had a mixture of DNA. It had Jamie's DNA on there and a mixture of somebody else's that at that time they said was too low level to tell anything about. And at trial, they made a deal about, well, that means it could very well be Sandy's because we can't tell whose it is. So right. we can't exclude Sandy. And, you know, we think it is Sandy or whatever the state said. Well, we've been able to exclude, or CyberGenetics has been able to exclude Sandy's profile from the other profile that's part of that mixture on the handle. And it's nobody's known DNA. In other words, they have the known DNA of all the family that came in, you know, and found them. So it's not somebody who came in and incidentally handled the knife later. It is probably the DNA of the last person holding that knife, in my opinion. And mm-hmm. it is not Sandy. It is an unknown. Now, it appears to overlap, maybe even match some DNA that was found on a bloody stool that appears to have been an instrumental part of this crime. So there appears to be some redundancy between the DNA on the knife handle and on the bloody stool.
Today's episode is sponsored by First Form. Listen up, I was talking a while ago how I was coming up on that 100-pound mark over the last 2.5 years, all the weight that I've lost with First Form. Well, I actually blew by that so fast that I think I forgot to even tell you guys. I'm now down to 106 pounds lost. And more importantly, I'm feeling great. Most of you know, if you've been listening, I just got back from a trip to Montana where I was doing a lot of backpacking and climbing. And I'll tell you what, at 46 years old, I conquered that mountain like it was nothing. With a 50-pound pack on my back every day, I was climbing, I was hiking, I was feeling strong and feeling great. And that's all due to First Form. And specifically, what I want to talk to you guys about today is their Level 1 high-quality protein powder. That's really been one of my favorite products of theirs over the years. The reason is that I didn't just want to lose weight. I've been wanting to lose weight and build muscle at the same time. And it's been working thanks to Level 1. And they just came out with a brand new flavor, which, to be honest, I haven't even tried it yet, but I can't wait to try it, iced oatmeal cookie. Up till now, my favorite flavor has been the ice cream cookie, but I also like the chocolate natural, the vanilla, the strawberry milkshake, the blueberry muffin, the caramel latte. They've got tons of great flavors. But Level 1 Protein is a premium whey protein powder designed to deliver a sustained release of protein to help support muscle repair and growth. It can help support your muscle repair and growth, your muscle recovery. It's a great way to get up your daily protein intake. And having high-quality protein in your diet is just good for your overall wellness. Just try it once. That's all it takes to understand what makes Level 1 such an incredible protein. And like all their products, it's so delicious that you'll wonder how you ever got by using anything else. Level 1 is crafted to deliver premium protein in a sustained release format. The formula in Level 1 is designed to mimic the assimilation rates of whole food proteins. First Form uses strictly low temperature processed protein to source Level 1. If you're looking to lose weight, especially if you're a little bit older like me, you need to add protein to your diet or you're going to lose all your muscle too. And while First Form has a ton of great supplements and products, Level 1 protein should definitely be on your list. Give it a try and get started today. All you have to do is just go to firstform.com/truth, and they're going to give you free shipping on any order over $75. And if you're a new customer, they'll email you a link to let you try out the First Form app for free for a month, which has also been probably the biggest key to my success. So stop talking, start doing, get back in shape, You can do it with First Form. One more time, that's firstform.com/truth. That's the number one, STPHORM.com/truth.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
And just to interject, I'm reading through my notes from those discussions, and Chase was confident enough to, you know, refer to the knife handle partial profile and stool partial profile. And they're all, most of these are minor profiles and DNA mixtures, but he labeled that unknown one. And then we have potentially an unknown two that he found with, on Sandy's bindings, and an unknown three on the guest bathroom doorknob, which is less probative. So the big one we're really interested in is that unknown one. But because there aren't, unfortunately, any complete profiles or profiles that would be, you know, CODIS eligible, we're just kind of trying to paint a picture that correlates with what our theory is of what happened, which is that some, you know, third party came in the house and did this.
And to clarify a little bit, there is an unknown profile that was picked up on Sandy's bindings. In other words, the bindings that were used to tie her up.
Right.
There's an unknown profile that's not hers and not any of the families who found her. You know, it's nobody's known. That it is highly likely it's whoever bound her up. And it's, you know, like I said, it's an unknown. And so what we have done, and we filed a motion this week, Caitlin and Chase filed a motion in the Harris County District Court for post-conviction DNA testing of the hairs that were found in Jamie's hand that have never been tested. And we think they could potentially be highly probative. Texas has a post-conviction DNA statute that we took advantage of, and that we're asking for what's called mitochondrial testing of those hairs. And what mitochondrial testing can do is it can exclude. So it could exclude, if it excludes, if we're able to get that testing and it exclude these hairs, Jamie is excluded as the donor and Sandy is excluded as the donor, then we think that can be highly probative, even though mitochondrial testing does not yield a result that can be put into CODIS. It can yield a result that can exclude potentially Sandy and Jamie. And if we get a suspect, it can produce a result that we can do a side-by-side comparison with.
By getting a mitochondrial DNA sample from them.
Yes.
Well, once we have a suspect. So this is, and it's incredible. And the thing that's most interesting about it is I'm thinking back to when we were covering the trial. Because my first thought when you were telling me about this was, why didn't I know about any of this DNA that even existed? But then I went kind of back through the trial, and it's because it was all just deemed useless back
then. Yes.
Yeah. They was just there. There's not enough there. We can't do anything with it. And I remember Colleen Barnett with the unknown profile, you know, kind of using that against Sandy the unknown profile on the knife because, you know, because they couldn't get enough information. She said, well, that could be Sandy's DNA on the knife. So to kind of make sure that everybody that's listening is clear. So what we know now is there absolutely is another profile on that knife. It is absolutely not Sandy. It is not Jamie. It is not Herman. It is not Maria. It is no one else. I presume they probably tested it against Liz and anybody else that they, you know, the known profiles right. They have. Doesn't match any of them. And then you said also, did you say that they think that it's the same profile that was found on the bloody stool in the bathroom?
It's consistent with, you know, for, it's partial is my understanding from how Chase has explained it.
It could be. It could be.
But could not be excluded as being right. from the same
donor. I don't
know
exactly what the numbers are, you know, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, 1 in 1,000 or what, but it is consistent with.
Who items very intimately, obviously the knife, but the stool as well, you know, involved in this murder. So
yeah, and then obviously the DNA found on Sandy's bindings is huge too, because I think that was another one. I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, at trial they kind of said, well, that could be Herman's DNA. We don't know. There's not enough there, you know, who had freed her from the bindings. So now was that one consistent with the DNA from the knife and the stool, or was that different? Because my theory has always been that there was, you know, 2 to 3 or more people involved in this.
It is different. Okay. It is different. Yeah.
And again, all known parties excluded from that. So, I mean, this is all huge. And then, of course, we have the motion going forward now that hopefully we'll get the testing and hopefully get some results on the hair. I assume there's been no writs or anything filed on any of this information. Are you guys still just gathering information before you try to make any kind of right. filing?
The only thing that's been officially filed is the Chapter 64 motion to get the judge to order post-conviction DNA testing that we filed this week, which is usually a precursor to a writ.
Okay, great. And I know that Kim Ogg, the previous district attorney, has been voted out. There's a new DA now. Can you guys speak out at all? Like, what is that relationship like so far as IPTX in this case in the new district? I know obviously they're not going to just tell you, oh yeah, we think she's innocent, but are they being cooperative? What's that relationship like?
Yes, the new head of the Conviction Integrity Unit has been very cooperative with us and seems like a really tremendous individual, and we're very, very hopeful that we can get some stuff done.
Great. So any other, I mean, not that there needs to be, that's a lot. And to be honest, that's a lot more than, you know, when we left the case, it was, well, we're hoping that maybe this spot on the safe that was in a storage unit might have some kind of DNA on it or might be blood, and there wasn't much else to work with. So it was, I mean, I'm thrilled, it was absolutely thrilled to hear there's all this stuff that's directly connected to the case where we have results on. Is that everything that's going on? Is there any other updates on Sandy's case before we move on?
Well, another important note I just wanted to mention about the DNA motion is that the Texas like statute for the Chapter 64, I believe, it permits if we get testing granted and then the testing results, the judge has to make findings, kind of weighing the other evidence at trial as to whether they think that would have made a difference, you know, with the jury verdict by like a certain, you know, legal standard. So they issue findings after the testing, and if they're favorable, then under the statute, she will be eligible for bail. So we could put on a bail hearing and potentially have her out on bail while we wait to file a writ and get a decision. So
oh, that's
it's a
incredible.
Lot of baiting at this point, but
that's great because yeah, I know she's, you know, I've talked to Liz occasionally, and I know Sandy has all of her medical issues and everything. It's a struggle, so it would be nice for her to be able to wait this process out at home. Because it seems that, you know, and that's always the frustrating part, as, you know, all of us that work in, you know, wrongful conviction, post-conviction relief stuff know, is logically speaking, like this seems like a complete slam dunk, you know, like with just the DNA on the knife and the DNA on the bindings, everything like this should be enough to get her home. But we know there's a lot more hurdles to it than that. So it would be great for her to be able to be home while that fight's going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Especially because it can take a while.
Yeah.
Those decisions. Yeah. So we're hopeful.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
So I want to move on to, I know from information that I've gotten kind of indirectly from Jesse and Jesse's Eldridge's case, there's been some updates. I haven't really shared anything because I don't know what can be shared. So while I got you on the phone, Allison, who's the lead on that case, has just stepped into the camera. What can you tell us about what's going on with Jesse Eldridge's case?
So we are in, you know, the umpteenth round of DNA testing in Jesse's case.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things about this kind of work is that science is always advancing, and there are some new methods of DNA extraction and testing that we have been utilizing in Jesse's case, and it has brought us some really hopeful developments in it. And I'm not going to get too much into the details because we're still smack dab in the middle of testing, but I will say that we've retested some of the most important evidence in Jesse's case, and it's been very fruitful. And we're hoping any day now that we will perhaps get some new leads, some new avenues that we can follow in Jesse's case.
Nice. It seems like, is it fair to say the confidence level about Jesse's case is higher than it was a couple of years ago?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As soon as we, anytime you have another round of DNA testing, you're always so hopeful. And this one's been particularly helpful. So we're very, very hopeful about Jesse's case still.
Yeah. And for perspective, for any of our listeners that weren't listening all the way back in season three, this has been, I know for Jesse more than anyone, but for everyone has been frustrating. In his case, he was convicted in a bench trial with no evidence. The only evidence really against him was the testimony of his brother, who concocted this story years after the crime, after being threatened and lied to about, he was told by police that his DNA was found on the scene. And long story short, his brother went into court and testified that he witnessed Jesse murdering Kiao Gove in 2019. And that's incredible to say, it's been 6 years. In an interview with me, Troy fully recanted that, admitted that he lied, admitted why he lied, and it was turned over to. So, you know, we were all thinking Jesse was coming home in a few weeks, and now it's 6 years later and it's still going on. So hopefully with that and this new DNA testing, like I said, I hate to be so coy about all this, but there's reasons for all of it. But from what I've heard and from what you're getting from Allison, it sounds like there's positive things happening in that case.
Yeah, that's right.
And the other thing I want to talk about is, you know, because one of the things I told Mike is I just really want to highlight, because I keep seeing, you know, I've subscribed to your guys' newsletter and on social media, and it feels, I know it's not this, but it feels like once a week there's somebody else walking out of prison because of IPTX's work. And one that got my attention was very recent, Joe David Padrone. And that's, Danis, that is the case that you were working on. So can you tell us a little bit about that one? Now, my audience knows nothing about that case, but it's pretty incredible story. And what I like about this one is, what I mentioned earlier, there's some innocence organizations that just don't have as much, seem to have as much success or are doing as much. I've dealt with a lot of them around the country where it's, oh, if there's a very obvious DNA test we can do, we'll do that. Other than that, we can't do anything. This took some boots on the ground work. And you guys, you know, frankly, busted your asses on this case to get Joe David free. So Danis, I'll let you tell that story.
Well, my beginning in it was 2011 when in Corpus Christi, where this trial occurred and where I practice, another appellate lawyer called me and said that he needed somebody to take over working on a post-conviction writ, but that he was almost done. And I agreed to take that on. And that was Joe David's case. And as I got to know Joe David and read through his notes and the file, I realized pretty quickly that that writ was not almost done. It wasn't what Joe David wanted. So we started and I worked up, you know, some legal issues, but Joe David always maintained that he wanted to address actual innocence. He had been convicted of capital murder in 2004 for a crime that occurred in 2002. And the trial, I mean, the evidence is basically one alleged eyewitness and three jailhouse snitches. There was no physical evidence tying him to it. They alleged that there were four people involved in committing the crime, and they only indicted two and convicted two and never answered any of the questions like who are the other two and where are the murder weapons? Where did these people go afterwards? There was a car described and none of that was answered in the trial. So it did seem like there was a lot missing. And so I understood Joe David's claim, but we didn't have anything to put in an actual innocence. We didn't know what the answers were. So fast forward, and he got a break in, I think it was 2018 or 2019, when serving his sentence in prison, he came into contact with someone who said he had some information. And so we chased that down, worked it up, and ultimately, I put together an actual innocence claim the best I could. I had never done that. I had done some direct appeals, but I hadn't addressed an actual innocence claim before. And then I took a job as the chief public defender in Corpus as we started a new public defender's office. And that meant I couldn't keep the case. So that's where Mike and Jesse and Chase came in. I reached out and asked them if they would be interested in or available to take over where we were. And procedurally, I had filed it, but we had not yet had any sort of evidentiary hearing. So pass it off to you, Mike.
Well, of course, Danis had done a wonderful job of working up the case. But to backtrack a little bit, this was Joe David and his co-defendant were indicted for capital murder. The trials were in 2003. This was a murder that took place in 2002. They were tried in 2003 and 2004. Joe David had a legendary criminal defense lawyer, a Doug Tinker, who has since passed. And even though they were going for the death penalty, and although they convicted him, the jury decided not to give him the death penalty. They gave him the automatic life. His co-defendant was not as fortunate. He got the death penalty and was executed about 10 years ago. Like Danis mentioned, it was a big part of all the witnesses' story to this is there were four perpetrators. The police never seemed interested in ever even identifying, much less holding accountable, what really are at least the other three perpetrators, because Joe David's innocent, much less the other two. And I always thought that was interesting. And what this witness that Danis mentioned was able to do was identify all four perpetrators. And he was able to do it because he was a member of their gang. And he was in a situation where one of the four, was confiding in him that he was involved and who the other three were. And the other three were gang members that really existed, and they were not locked up at the time this happened. And his story added up and made a lot of sense. And at the hearing, he came to court. I mean, we had to bench warrant him because he was in prison too. He came to court and testified, subject to cross-examination. And the judge found him credible, made a finding that he was a very credible witness. In other words, she believed him that this person had confessed to him and named the other three actors. We also were able to bring one of the jailhouse misinformants back to the hearing, who completely recanted his testimony. He said, you know, Joe David never confessed to me. He always insisted he was innocent. And then we were able to bring another witness who said that he was in jail with one of the other jailhouse misinformants. And all that witness did is brag about how he was going to get a deal by lying about Joe David. And she found all of those witnesses credible. And ultimately, what the Court of Criminal Appeals did is they did not make an actual innocence finding, but they found that he was convicted as a result of perjured testimony presented by the state, and they vacated his capital murder conviction. And it's now, long story, it's now in the hands of the Hidalgo County District Attorney's Office, who have come in as attorneys pro tem for the Nueces County District Attorney's Office on what to do with the case. And what we're hoping for, of course, is that they will ultimately decide to dismiss this case based on actual innocence.
That's amazing. The part about it that amazes me is, and it's not, this is the type of work you guys do. That's kind of how we built our relationship over the years, is that, you know, for an innocence organization, this is a non-DNA vacation of a conviction. And in my experience, you just don't see a lot of that in the, you know, the innocence organization world. I've worked case after case where, you know, people have applied their, you know, applied to have their case taken on by innocence projects. And if there's no obvious DNA, they don't handle it. So that's the part that I find really incredible, is that you guys just take the time, really look at the cases, put the boots on the ground, do the work. Just like, as you mentioned in Sandy's case, aside from the DNA, you have people, you know, working and investigating the case as we speak. So I just wanted to highlight that case a little bit. Do you guys have, off the top of your head, I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this, so I don't know if you're not prepared for it. Do you have a number of how many convictions have been overturned and or people, you know, freed based on innocence and parole or anything like that since the IPTX has been in existence?
We're at 40.
40. And keep in mind that the number nationally is less than 1% of cases that go into post-conviction work that get overturned. So I just want to, big congratulations to all you guys, specifically Mike, on your award. I know we're squeezing this in between you receiving your award and some other event that you have going, so I'm not going to keep you guys too long. But one thing I want to leave the audience with is the IPTX is a nonprofit. They're doing amazing work, and they can always use your help. And I just want to give you the link here, and Erica will put it into our description as well for this episode. But if you go to their website, innocencetexas.org/donate, any little bit you can do to help is just going to help them continue to do the great work that they're doing. So again, that's innocencetexas.org/donate. And also there's spots on the website where you can volunteer to help. They can always use help. So I just want to, just as much support as we can give as an audience to the Innocence Project of Texas. You know, they're obviously near and dear to our heart. You know, we get to celebrate, you know, with Ed Eights every year being home. You know, he's going on 7 years now being home with his family because of the work done by this organization. And with that being said, I'm going to let you guys get back to celebrating. But all of you, Caitlin, Danis, Mike, and Allison, thank you guys so much for joining me. And Mike, again, congratulations. That's incredible and well-deserved.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.